Working remotely, where you are shouldn't dictate what you do. Work from the road by turning your vehicle into a reliable high-speed data Wi-Fi hotspot with AT&T in-car Wi-Fi. On the network that covers more roads than any other carrier, take your work on the road and AT&T will be there to keep you connected. Connect up to 10 devices and stream conference calls, finish up that presentation, or answer last-minute emails. Why wait? Go to att.com/in-car Wi-Fi today for free trial eligibility. Based on independent third-party data, number of devices varies by manufacturer. Always pay careful attention to the road and don't drive distracted. Wi-Fi hotspot intended for passenger use only when vehicle is in operation. Compatible device and vehicle required.
Experts claim there is nothing tougher than a diamond. But at Diamonds Direct, we beg to differ. Have you ever met a mother? Strong, radiant, timeless. This Mother's Day, give her the gift that meets her match. With diamond jewelry starting at $200, plus Diamonds Direct's exceptional quality and unbeatable everyday price, you're sure to give her a gift that wows this generation and the next to come. Experience the thrill of jewelry shopping done right at Diamonds Direct. Diamonds Direct. Your love, our passion.
Hey, this is Christina Quinn. I'm the host of Try This, the Washington Post's new series of audio courses. The idea behind Try This is to become better functioning humans without having to comb the internet for countless hours. In our first course, we learned how to sleep better. Now, we're going to learn how to make our friendships stronger. I'll offer expert tips that are doable, and I'll keep it short. So let's do this. Class is in session. Find Try This from the Washington Post wherever you listen.
Welcome to Tech Stuff, a production from iHeartRadio. Hey there, and welcome to Tech Stuff. I'm your host, Jonathan Strickland. I'm an executive producer with iHeart Podcasts, and how the tech are ya? It's time for the tech news for the week ending on Friday, April 19th, 2024, and let's get to it. Now, if you've been listening to Tech Stuff for just a bit, you know I've talked about the issue of Chinese hackers having infiltrated various American networks, and those include networks that belong to critical infrastructure. So this first news item, I would argue, is not really new news, but it is important. In fact, I've even talked specifically about Christopher Wray, the director of the Federal Bureau of Investigation, warning us about Chinese infiltration of these systems. I talked about that earlier this year, but Wray and his warnings are back in the news because he gave a speech this week at Vanderbilt University. In that speech, among other things, he said Chinese agents have breached systems ranging from telecommunications networks to power grid networks and tons of other stuff as well. And that China is essentially just biding its time, and eventually it will use this presence in these networks to wreak havoc on the United States. Wray called this initiative Volt Typhoon. He said that's the name of this whole project of infiltration, and said it was the product of the Chinese government. Now, China's Ministry of Foreign Affairs, for what it's worth, has said, no, that's a criminal hacker group, and it has no connection to the government. Now, what is the truth? Beats me. But if Volt Typhoon is, as the government spokesperson had said, the efforts of a ransomware group, it does seem odd to me that the group hasn't, you know, demanded a ransom. Ransomware only makes sense if you alert your victim to the fact that they've been breached and then demand a ransom. If not, then it's not ransomware. So if, in fact, it's a result of a criminal ransomware group, why has this group not done that? What is it waiting for? Now, it could be that it's waiting for the time to cause the maximum amount of chaos by striking all these various targets simultaneously, because maybe that way they'll net a much larger payoff. If everything looks like it's going haywire, then maybe that would create the situation where you get paid millions of dollars in order to stop. But whether that's the truth or whether China itself is actually behind the attacks, it's seriously bad news for America. It could mean that America has some really rough times to look forward to. And the thing is, we don't know when that will happen. Only that, because it can happen, it will eventually happen. Speaking of China, we have more news in the story of how the U.S. government is going after TikTok. When last we left this tale, the U.S. House of Representatives had voted in favor of either forcing ByteDance, which is TikTok's Chinese parent company, to sell TikTok off to someone else, notably someone not considered a quote-unquote foreign adversary by the good old U.S. of A, or they would face a nationwide ban on the app. And I said it had seemed less likely that the U.S. Senate would actually push this bill through into being signed into law. Then we had one U.S. Senator, Maria Cantwell, suggest a change to the House bill to extend the deadline for ByteDance to comply from 6 months to a year. And that helped move the needle a little bit. Some other senators started to be perhaps a little more comfortable expressing support for such a possible bill in the Senate. And that might be because that timeline also pushes the actual sale date to after the U.S. elections this year. And now things are getting even murkier because the House of Representatives, after making that alteration to the bill and extending the deadline, have lumped the TikTok stuff in with a larger package of bills relating to foreign aid to Ukraine and Israel, which is kind of sneaky, but it's very much typical in U.S. politics. Anyway, there remain questions as to whether such a law would even be constitutional. And there is no question at all that TikTok would immediately challenge such a law in court in an effort to force an official decision as to whether the law is valid or not. And behind all of this is a teeny tiny but lingering problem that the United States doesn't actually have evidence that TikTok has been acting as a kind of like surveillance tool for the Chinese government. Now, that is an issue because the whole crux of the bill argues that there are these dangers of having a data-powered app owned by a foreign adversary. That's the reason the bill has been written, at least according to the language of the bill. Now, of course, there are some leaders who have plenty of different objections to TikTok that have very little to do with whether or not Chinese officials have access to the data. For the record, I don't like TikTok. And it is very true that China does have laws that, if those laws are enforced, compel citizens and Chinese companies to gather intelligence on behalf of the Chinese government. However, I'm also a stickler for proof and evidence, so just saying that something could happen is different than saying something has happened. And you can't, in my mind, punish people for something that could happen. Like, that's ridiculous, right? I mean, everyone could potentially commit a crime, but we don't just go and arrest everyone ahead of time in order to avoid that. We wait until someone has committed a crime, then the legal system gets involved. So this whole thing doesn't sit very well with me. Even though I am no fan of TikTok, I'm also not a fan of the government taking action against a perceived threat that has not been proven to actually be a threat. So, yeah, still a complicated big old mess, and we still don't really know where it's going to go. It just seems now that it is more likely to get passed into law than it would have been, say, a month ago. So maybe it turns out that by the end of this month, we're going to see a law that's going to either compel ByteDance to sell off TikTok or to face a national ban, and then that'll precipitate all these other legal actions, I'm sure. Now, I've got a few AI stories today. First up is a pretty concerning one. The U.S. Air Force, in partnership with DARPA, which is the Defense Advanced Research Projects Agency, have announced that an AI-powered X-62A Vista aircraft has engaged in simulated dogfights against actual human pilots. Now, to be clear, the Vista is a real aircraft. It is derived from the F-16D Fighting Falcon aircraft. And last year, Lockheed Martin issued a press release saying that an AI-piloted Vista aircraft had been flying under AI control for more than 17 hours. Now we're talking about simulating air-to-air combat with actual human pilots. And during the dogfights, human pilots were also on the Vista aircraft. So it wasn't like it was just robot-controlled and there were no other people. There were humans in the cockpit as well. They were there to intervene if it were necessary, but it turned out not to be so. The AI piloted the Vista within human safety norms. Now, that is interesting to point out, because if you think about it, a jet being controlled by AI would not necessarily have to obey the safety norms, because you don't have a human pilot who's going to black out if the aircraft engages in maneuvers that would put too much force upon the humans inside. So it's possible for an AI aircraft to do stuff that human-piloted aircraft just can't do. It's also possible for an AI-powered aircraft to rip a plane apart by trying to make it do something that it just physically cannot do. Anyway, we're still quite a ways out from aircraft that will fly and engage in actual combat all by themselves, but this is a big step closer to that, and that's something that concerns a lot of people, not just in the tech field, well beyond that, including me. I mean, I really worry about how quickly a nation might enter into armed conflict if they can do so just by sending in the robots. I worry that would lead to a future that would be more violent with more civilian casualties. But then I also read a lot of science fiction where this kind of stuff has been talked about ad nauseum. Moving to a less violent but arguably equally as scary AI story, Meta recently released an early version of its latest large language model, which is dubbed Llama 3. It also released an AI image generator that, according to Reuters, quote, updates pictures in real time while users type prompts, end quote. Now that last bit is quite impressive. I've used image generators just to kind of test them out, and they take a prompt typically, and usually it calculates a response that takes between 30 seconds to a minute before showing you an image. So to have a model capable of making dynamic changes as you type in new edits to your prompt, that's really impressive. And you could also see how someone could use a tool like that to create an image and then refine it or alter it until they got something close to what they wanted. And that you could see as being an enormous concern to, you know, actual human artists. There are also still massive questions about how companies like Meta are actually training these AI tools to begin with, including potentially the use of other people's work without their consent. Meta's messaging around AI is similar to what you would see with companies like Microsoft or OpenAI, and to be clear, OpenAI is heavily funded by Microsoft, namely that AI tools are there to help take certain tasks off your hands, and that future versions of this tool will allow for things like making detailed multi-step plans that actually make sense. So I guess it all depends on where you come down on generative AI as to whether you see this as a positive step toward greater productivity or a more concerning step toward copyright infringement and displacement of people, that kind of thing. Okay, we're going to take a quick break to thank our sponsors. When we come back, I've got some more news stories to talk about. Working remotely, where you are shouldn't dictate what you do. Work from the road by turning your vehicle into a reliable high-speed data Wi-Fi hotspot with AT&T in-car Wi-Fi. On the network that covers more roads than any other carrier, take your work on the road and AT&T will be there to keep you connected. Connect up to 10 devices and stream conference calls, finish up that presentation, or answer last-minute emails. Why wait? Go to att.com/in-car Wi-Fi today for free trial eligibility. Based on independent third-party data, number of devices varies by manufacturer. Always pay careful attention to the road and don't drive distracted. Wi-Fi hotspot intended for passenger use only when vehicle is in operation. Compatible device and vehicle required.
The best conversations I have with my colleagues are the ones that happen when no one is looking, when we're not 100% sure yet what to write.
Hopefully, having conversations like this can help you figure out your own point of view. That's kind of our job as Washington Post opinions columnists. I'm Charles Lane, Deputy Opinion Editor.
And I'm Amanda Ripley, a contributing columnist. We're going to bring you into these conversations on a new podcast called Impromptu.
Follow Impromptu now, wherever you listen.
When you think about the future, what kind of technology do you envision? Whatever the future holds, artificial intelligence will undoubtedly be at the heart of it all. Join Graham Class as he hosts Season 2 of Technically Speaking, an Intel podcast from Ruby Studio in partnership with Intel. Explore the future of technology that's rapidly evolving our world today with the help of AI. There is still so much work and research needed to fully understand the power and potential of AI. And Intel is at the forefront of implementing AI in revolutionary technology that's changing the world we live in for the better. In each episode, Graham interviews the minds transforming medicine and healthcare, retail, entertainment, personal computing, and more, while pioneering new uses for AI in these spaces. Tune in every other Tuesday and explore the latest technology that's changing our world today and creating a more accessible tomorrow. Listen to Technically Speaking, an Intel podcast on the iHeartRadio app, Apple Podcasts, or wherever you get your podcasts. Okay, we're back. I still have another AI story here. So Microsoft also introduced a new AI tool this week, and it's getting a lot of buzz. It's called Vasa 1, V-A-S-A 1. And this is an AI image to video tool, which means you can feed it a still image, like a photograph, in other words, and you can give it an audio clip, and then Vasa 1 will create a fully animated video incorporating those two things. So if you took a selfie, let's say you take a selfie and then you upload audio from some other source, like maybe it's Alec Baldwin's monologue in Glengarry Glen Ross, well, Vasa 1 would manipulate your selfie image so it looked like video of you explaining that second place is a set of steak knives and third place is you're fired. Or as Daniel John of CreativeBlock.com puts it, quote, "It's capable of creating deepfake videos based on a single image," end quote. That being said, Microsoft has said that the Vasa 1 is an internal tool and it's being used for research purposes, and the company has no intention of releasing it as a product. So folks like you and me wouldn't be able to get our grubby little hands on it, unless you happen to work for Microsoft in their AI research department, that is. I've seen some short animations of this thing in action. I do find it unsettling, but then again, I'm easily unsettled. Now let us turn to the matter of bots, those little automated critters that typically rank lower on our robo-terror meters than AI-powered fighter jets or generative AI determined to turn creativity into an algorithm. There's still something we got to deal with. So Sean Mitchell wrote a piece that I saw in Security Brief, which is a New Zealand publication, and it's titled, "Half of Online Traffic in 2024 Generated by Bots," report finds. So that report comes from a cybersecurity company called Thales, and it said that 49.6% of all internet traffic is from bots. 49.6. And that this is a continuation of a trend, and it's been going on for years. So like each year, we've seen that trend higher. That means that perhaps next year, we could see more traffic generated by bots on the internet than by actual human beings. You know, bots will be making content for other bots. Eventually, the rest of us will just disconnect and go for a walk or something, or maybe read some poetry, or probably just stay online and complain about how ding-dang cluttered everything is. So the piece really has much more of a cybersecurity focus, which is legit. I mean, that's understandable both for the publication and for the actual issues, because a significant amount of bot traffic does relate to malicious intent, whether that is to spread misinformation or perpetuate malware across networks. That is a big thing to be worried about. But I'm also generally worried that we're rapidly reaching a point where the stuff that is actually generating content is going to be making that not for people, but actually for other bots. If bots are making up the majority of the traffic, then they're going to be a feedback loop of bots making stuff for bots. And that can mean that over time, we start to encounter content that's deviating significantly from what, you know, human beings would care to consume. It's a weird thought, right? That you could go on and be like, none of this makes sense or is at all compelling or interesting, but it's because it wasn't made for you. It was made for where all the traffic's coming from, which is from other bots. That's a weird thing to think about, but here's the crazy thing is that we may not have to wait too much longer to actually see that start to unfold. So if you think AI generative hallucinations are weird now, we're just getting started. Next up, the great halving of Bitcoin is upon us. Halving as in cut in half. So the way Bitcoin works is that the Bitcoin network creates what is essentially a very hard math problem. And all the computers that are connected to the network that are trying to mine Bitcoins, what they're really doing is they're trying to solve this very hard math problem. You could argue that really this just comes down to guessing a very, very, very large number. So upon solving the math problem, a couple of things happen. First, that solution verifies the current block of transactions on the blockchain, the one that's just being finished up. And then that block becomes the newest link in the blockchain. The computer or system of computers that's responsible for solving the problem receives some Bitcoin as a reward. It's like your fee for solving this issue. And there is a finite number of Bitcoin that will ever be issued. And so to control circulation and distribution, the system periodically halves the number of Bitcoins that are rewarded upon solving the math problem. For the last few years, if you were the one who solved the math problem, you would get 6.25 Bitcoins for each time you did that. Currently, Bitcoin is trading at around $65,000 per Bitcoin. So that means if you solve it, you get around $406,000 worth of Bitcoin for solving that problem. And there's a new problem every 10 minutes. So that's what drives Bitcoin miners to do stuff like take over old power plants in order to use their sources to have these massive computer networks tackling these problems, which interestingly makes the problems even more difficult because the system is dynamic. It detects if people are solving problems too quickly, it makes the problems harder. So if you can make 400 grand every 10 minutes, then it's worth the expense to have this massive computer network running off incredible amounts of electricity. Well, soon that number of Bitcoins awarded is going to go down to 3.125 per solution. So assuming that the value of Bitcoin remains in the general neighborhood of 65 grand, which by the way is not a sure thing, but we'll get to that, that would mean that now a solution would net you $203,000, which is obvious, right? You just cut in half the amount that you would have made previously. So this raises some questions. Does this mean that the really huge mining operations will start to shut down? Because if you're making half as much per solution, you could reach a point where it costs too much to operate your mining operation compared to how much you make in solving these problems. And then there are other questions, like what if the value of Bitcoin itself changes? Well, if the value of Bitcoin goes up, then it might very well mean that it's still worth it to use as much electricity as some countries do in a full year. We've seen the value of Bitcoin fluctuate quite a bit this week, like even more than it usually fluctuates, which is already a lot, but it's still hard to say where things ultimately are going to go. I will say that Bitcoin's value has grown way more than I thought it would back when it was still trading at around $20,000 per crypto coin after it had its kind of crash. I was like, well, I don't know if we're ever going to see it go up as high again, but we did. It got higher than it had ever been before. However, it's also not as valuable as what some evangelists were predicting last year when they said it was going to hit $100,000 per Bitcoin before 2023 was over. That did not happen. So I guess what I'm saying is that no one really knows where it's going to go from here. No one knows if it's going to keep going to the moon and continue to feed this cycle of crazy Bitcoin mining operations, or if it's going to level out or even start to dip and thus change that nature. Nobody knows. If someone tells you otherwise, that they definitively know where it's going to go, they're probably heavily invested in cryptocurrency. They're probably trying to get other people to buy in to cryptocurrency because that protects their investment, right? Like if more people are interested in it and more people are investing in it, it drives the value up and their own investment increases by comparison. I put this for like all of the crypto community, by the way. If you run into someone who is extremely passionate about the crypto community, it's not a hard and fast rule, but chances are they're in pretty deep. Like they've invested in that. And so their investment only pays off if the value increases. And the value increases only if enough people share that same belief that the value is greater. If people lose confidence in it, then the value goes down and then you start losing money on your investment. So I always view anyone who is really a hardcore cheerleader of the crypto community with some skepticism. Okay, we're going to take another quick break. When we come back, I do have a couple more news items I want to talk about. But first, let's take another break to thank our sponsors.
Working remotely, where you are shouldn't dictate what you do. Work from the road by turning your vehicle into a reliable high-speed data Wi-Fi hotspot with AT&T in-car Wi-Fi. On the network that covers more roads than any other carrier, take your work on the road and AT&T will be there to keep you connected. Connect up to 10 devices and stream conference calls, finish up that presentation, or answer last-minute emails. Why wait? Go to att.com/in-car Wi-Fi today for free trial eligibility. based on independent third-party data. Number of devices varies by manufacturer. Always pay careful attention to the road and don't drive distracted. Wi-Fi hotspot intended for passenger use only when vehicle is in operation. Compatible device and vehicle required.
The 2024 presidential campaign features two candidates who are very well known to Americans. And yet, there's complexity at every turn. Criminal trials for one of those candidates. Young voters who are angry. The Campaign Moment podcast from The Washington Post gives you what matters. I'm Aaron Blake, and I'm covering my 10th election cycle. My colleagues and I have insights that you won't find anywhere else. So follow The Campaign Moment right now, wherever you're listening.
When you think about the future, what kind of technology do you envision? Whatever the future holds, artificial intelligence will undoubtedly be at the heart of it all. Join Graham Class as he hosts Season 2 of Technically Speaking, an Intel podcast from Ruby Studio in partnership with Intel. Explore the future of technology that's rapidly evolving our world today with the help of AI. There is still so much work and research needed to fully understand the power and potential of AI. And Intel is at the forefront of implementing AI in revolutionary technology that's changing the world we live in for the better. In each episode, Graham interviews the minds transforming medicine and healthcare, retail, entertainment, personal computing, and more, while pioneering new uses for AI in these spaces. Tune in every other Tuesday and explore the latest technology that's changing our world today and creating a more accessible tomorrow. Listen to Technically Speaking, an Intel podcast on the iHeartRadio app, Apple Podcasts, or wherever you get your podcasts. Okay, we've got a few more news stories to cover before we close out today. Google is making an interesting organizational change within the company. They are combining departments focused on Android and Google Chrome. So these are software-focused departments, in other words, with Google's hardware division. So they're integrating the two. And the purpose of making this change is to create tighter integrations with AI, of course. I could have put this with the AI stories. I didn't think about that. So this does continue a trend in which Google has leaned on its Pixel series of Android phones to feature the company's various AI implementations. So I think we're going to see that continue and become more apparent with future Pixel releases. Probably not this year's, but maybe like a couple years down the line. Now, what I'm really curious about is how this is going to affect Google's relationship with other hardware companies, like Samsung, for example. Samsung makes some very popular Android phones. And by tying the Android department with the Google hardware department so closely together, it makes me wonder if that's going to put other companies at a disadvantage when it comes to using Android, right? Like the idea of your purpose-built hardware was made with this specific version of Android in mind, that's different than say, oh, here's a hardware platform, let's put Android on top of it. So I'm very curious to see how this affects those relationships. I'm wondering if it's going to cause some friction. Samsung is kind of going through its own crisis right now. I didn't really put this in the lineup, but right now that company has mandated a 6-day work week, not for their regular staff, but for their executives. Executives, it's kind of a little bit of schadenfreude for those of us who are used to the rank and file having to work super duper hard while executives are off on their yachts or whatever, or golf courses. In this case, Samsung executives will have to work either Saturday or Sunday in addition to their normal work week because that company is currently going through a pretty rough time. But that has more to do with their semiconductor business, not their like mobile hardware business. Anyway, I guess Google's decision really is understandable if you want to push the envelope of AI features, because then you really do need a tight integration between the software side and the hardware side to make sure that you can actually support the stuff you want to do. You need to have a lot more control over all the elements involved. And it doesn't really work for you to just build a solution that will hopefully work on whatever platform it ends up on. It's not going to be as good of a product as you could do if you had everything under your control. I'm just not sure how it's going to impact other companies that use Android operating systems. Maybe we'll see a branching Android where one version is what you would find on Google-made hardware and one version is on everything else. That's possible. I haven't read anything about it, so it don't. There's no guarantee that that's what's going to happen. I'm just thinking kind of off the cuff here. And now to segue into our Cut the Cable segment. To be clear, this isn't about cord cutters getting rid of cable TV, although that continues to be a big thing. Instead, this is about literal instances of physical cables being cut and the problems that arise because of it. So first up, earlier this week here in America, four states, Nevada, Nebraska, South Dakota, and Texas, experienced 911 outages. So for those of y'all not from the United States, 911 is our number for emergencies, phone number. So as you can imagine, a 911 disruption is a really big deal because suddenly folks who are in need of help have a reliable line disrupted. They cannot reach the emergency services that they need. So what actually happened? Well, a telecommunications company called Lumen Technologies explained, for at least some of these cases, that a third-party company, quote, physically cut our fiber, end quote, and that this happened while that third-party company was trying to install a light pole. So they were just trying to install this thing, and in the process, they cut through a telecommunications cable that caused this 911 outage, which is a powerful reminder of how our communications capability is still really dependent upon a lot of physical hardware, right? It's easy to forget that because we've gone so cordless over the years. Like, it seems like everything just works by magic. But no, there's like physical equipment that's making all this work. And if that physical equipment is damaged or destroyed, we lose that connectivity. Now, I should also add that according to a representative from Lumen, that particular cable would not have been responsible for any service in Texas. So the outage in Texas appears to be, at least based on what I could read, unrelated to the loss of service in those other states. So that's odd. It's a weird coincidence that it would happen in Texas as well. According to one thing I read, people in Texas were saying that it appeared to be a T-Mobile disruption and that you could still reach 911 if you were using a landline or some other mobile company. So yeah, it's just odd that it seemed to coincide with this other outage that was due to a physical cable being cut. And the other story I wanted to talk about with cables getting cut happened in Sacramento, California. Someone cut an AT&T cable and disrupted internet service for the Sacramento airport for a whole bunch of airlines. And as you might imagine, the disruption meant that tons of passengers and crew experienced very long delays as the various companies tried to find a solution in the meantime. Now, amazingly, no flights were actually canceled, but things did move at a much more deliberate pace as airlines had to go back to some pretty old methods, like handwriting out boarding passes and such. According to sources who spoke with the New York Times, the damage to the cable happened about 2.5 miles from the airport itself. And based upon the nature of that damage, it looks like it was an intentional act of sabotage, though at the time I'm recording this, I don't have any information on any suspects or motive behind it. That was it. But now time for some recommended reading. So first up, Mara Vistal, and I apologize, Mara, for butchering your name, but of the New York Times, she has a piece titled, "A Trove of ByteDance Records Mistakenly Went Public, Here's What They Say." So her piece details an error made by a court that led to a bunch of files going public, and these files give a lot more information about the origins of ByteDance and how they connect to an investment company headed by a conservative political donor named Jeff Yass. I imagine Yass is very much opposed to legislation that would either force ByteDance to divest itself of TikTok or to have the app outright banned. Next up, John Brodkin at Ars Technica has a piece titled, "Cops Can Force Suspect to Unlock Phone with Thumbprint, U.S. Court Rules." The question about how authorities are allowed to access things like locked phones or locked computers has come up several times, and it is a very tricky and sticky legal subject, not just a technical subject. So Brodkin's article explains how a particular set of circumstances could be seen as being illegal, like the law would be well within its rights to compel you to unlock your phone. But under other circumstances, it could be viewed as unconstitutional. Sometimes it almost feels like it's down to semantics. You need to read the article to get a full appreciation for it because it does show exactly how tricky the situation is. Finally, Kate Nibbs at Wired has an article that's titled, "How One Author Pushed the Limits of AI Copyright." Now, you might remember previous news stories in which a judge ruled that in order for a work to be eligible for copyright at all, it has to be of human origin. This Wired article covers the story of an author named Elisa Shoup, who wrote a novel with the assistance of ChatGPT and Shoup's efforts to secure a copyright for that work. And it's pretty interesting stuff. And it does raise more questions about where's the line? At what point can you say a work is eligible for copyright protection? And in which case would you say, no, that's too much? Like, do you actually have a hard and fast rule of how much material can be generated by AI versus a human before you get to a point where you say copyright is or isn't, you know, valid? Really fascinating kind of problem to think about. And it is going to be a problem. Like, it's a problem now, but it's going to be a bigger problem the more advanced this AI gets. So yes, those are some articles that are well worth your time if you're looking into reading some other tech news or tech opinions. I recommend those. And I hope you are all well, and I will talk to you again really soon. Tech Stuff is an iHeartRadio production. For more podcasts from iHeartRadio, visit the iHeartRadio app, Apple Podcasts, or wherever you listen to your favorite shows.
I'm Katia Adler, host of The Global Story. Over the last 25 years, I've covered conflicts in the Middle East, political and economic crises in Europe, drug cartels in Mexico. Now I'm covering the stories behind the news all over the world in conversation with those who break it. Join me Monday to Friday to find out what's happening, why, and what it all means. Follow The Global Story from the BBC wherever you listen to podcasts.
This is Malcolm Gladwell from Revisionist History. eBay Motors is here for the ride. With some elbow grease, fresh installs, and a whole lot of love, you transformed 100,000 miles and a body full of rust into a drive that's all your own. Brake kits, LED headlights, whatever you need, eBay Motors has it. And with eBay Guaranteed Fit, it's guaranteed to fit your ride the first time, every time, or your money back. Plus, at these prices, you're burning rubber, not cash. Keep your ride or die alive at ebaymotors.com. Eligible items only. Exclusions apply.
Are you looking for the perfect move-in ready home this spring season? Now's the time to buy at Fisher Homes. For a limited time only, enjoy below market interest rates starting at 5.375% APR, 6.139% APR. With these exclusive lower rates, you can save hundreds on a move-in ready home and start enjoying the benefits of homeownership even faster. Schedule your personal tour with one of our new home specialists at fisherhomes.com and make this spring the season you find your perfect home sweet home. Financing provided by Victory Mortgage, LLC, NMLS 461249, Equal Housing Lender.